You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Our next guest sees a rising epidemic, the growing issue of women and alcohol abuse and binge drinking.
She speaks from experience. She's a recovered alcoholic and a journalist who interviewed many women struggling with alcohol abuse.
Ann Dowsett Johnston is also a former vice president of McGill University, an award-winning magazine writer, and the author of Drink, The Intimate Relationship Between Women and Alcohol. Ann, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you call the relationship between women and alcohol intimate. Why is that?
Women tend to have a very different relationship with alcohol than men do. Men tend to use alcohol to socialize. I'm talking about when they get into trouble, to socialize, hang out at the sports bar, maybe risk take. Women tend to use alcohol to isolate, to address issues around depression, loneliness, anxiety, stress. So they manifest their issues differently, and that tends to be a very intimate relationship, one-on-one.
Does that mean, off the bat, it's more dangerous for women when they're not drinking responsibly?
Yeah, it's definitely more dangerous. Democratically, we're equal, but metabolically and hormonally, when it comes to alcohol, we are not equal at all. We are physiologically just not as suited to drinking. We have more body fat and less of a certain enzyme that helps metabolize alcohol. So we get into trouble faster, a lot faster, in just about right across the board in terms of the cancers, the cognitive problems, liver cirrhosis. We become addicted more quickly. And that isn't something that I think has been part of the national dialogue or international dialogue. We don't know, for instance, that 15% of breast cancer cases are linked to alcohol use. So much as we really understand the downside of tobacco, we don't understand the downside of our favorite legal drug.
Well, you've talked about the rise of dangerous drinking among women and girls as a growing epidemic. How widespread is the problem that we're talking about?
Across the developed world, we are really closing the gender gap. And what is puzzling epidemiologists is the gap is closing for all age groups. It's no longer just the campus over-drinking that we're talking about, but young women in the professions and educated women continue to drink heavily, binge drink into their 20s and their 30s. So these are prime childbearing years. They don't slow down. The pattern is different. So in 20s and 30s, it's been named weekend, being a weekend warrior. You drink very heavily on the weekend, maybe to blackout. In 40s and 50s, women tend to drink more on a daily basis, maybe not blacking out, but drinking at the binge drinking level. So the Center for Disease Control in January said that binge drinking was at epidemic levels in the United States, really seriously under appreciated problem. And what's happening is men are plateauing or slowing down, and women are catching up at really a startling rate, and in some countries, such as England, almost at parity with men, which is virtually unheard of.
So what's going on? Why are women catching up now? What's happening in society, do you think?
Well, that's what my book is about. It's really trying to tease this apart and tease apart why women, I think there's a number of reasons. Number one, we're 40% more likely to suffer from depression and anxiety, and I think there's no doubt that we do self-medicate with our favorite drug, our favorite legal drug. I think also we are going through a huge socioeconomic revolution where women are going toe-to-toe with men in the workplace. They're told they have to be perfect at home, perfect at work, perfectly thin, perfectly perfect, and it's, I think, a way to de-stress. I don't think there's any mystery to that. I ask in the book, is it the modern woman's steroid enabling her to do the heavy lifting that is part of modern life? And I think in many cases that's true.
Yeah, that's a really interesting quote of yours, and it's personal for you, too. You're a recovered alcoholic. You've been sober about 5 years, and you talk about how wine in particular helped you feel like you could breathe, like finally there wasn't this piano sitting on your back. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about your own experience and how you used alcohol when you were having troubles.
Yeah, I think what is alarming for me is that I was a high-functioning professional who would have a drink or maybe two for many years in my 20s or 30s, 40s, making that shift from my day shift to my evening shift, overseeing homework and chopping vegetables. And it really stayed like that for a long, long time. And then I hit a perfect storm in my 50s of menopause, emptiness syndrome, and depression. And all of a sudden, I found that my drinking increased, and I found it pleasant. To be frank, I found it pleasant and a relief, and I was numbing problems, and I got into trouble and took myself to rehab. It was startling how quickly it happened and how disturbing it was. Completely the opposite of the picture of my mother, who was a 1960s drinker, stay-at-home mom who mixed Valium with cocktails and had a much more extreme case. I didn't drink during the day. I didn't miss work. And I think it's insidious. It's insidious and progressive and can sneak up on you.
And for you, sort of one of the moments of truth was a moment when you had to stop drinking for a little while and your son, I think, took notice. What happened?
Oh, thanks for mentioning this. This was a very hard moment in my life. My son made me a homemade Mother's Day card saying portrait of a happy mother. Portrait of a happy mother is a woman, is a mother with whose whites of her eyes are white, who's drinking Perrier, not wine. I opened that card, took one look at it, and knew that he was communicating to me, as I had always wanted to communicate to my own mother, you have a drinking problem and you must stop. And I took that card and put it in my day book, carried it around for a little while, and as I said, ultimately went to treatment. That was 5 years ago, and I just celebrated yesterday my five-year anniversary of being sober.
Yeah, so, congratulations.
Thanks. It had a huge effect on me, that card.
Well, there's obviously a lot of reasons alcohol is damaging to your body. We talked about that, but we also just talked about the toll that it can have on families and children and partners. Is that kind of damage especially dire for women because they're often at the heart of families?
Yes, it's very tough on a family when either parent drinks, but I think especially damaging when it's a mother, and especially difficult to get help. Often women are in situations where they're not able to leave their families to go out and get treatment and get the kind of care that they need. So it's really important that we're aware and cognizant that women who need treatment receive it, that there are programs that accommodate children and family programs that help families heal, understand the very, very interesting and troubling and tragic problems that can happen to the whole family system. It can have a huge effect.
Now, you've been trying to answer the question of why with your book, and one spotlight you want to shine is on the alcohol industry itself, and it seems as though they are in particular beginning to target women. Can you talk about why that might be happening and what is going on?
Yeah, this is, I think, a really fascinating story whereby in the mid-1990s, the spirits industry looked and realized all the Johnny Walker drinkers were dying out and said, oh my goodness, how are we going to catch up with beer? Beer was fun and beer was cleaner than their clocks, and they looked around at market segmentation and saw women, saw a whole gender that had not been targeted, and thus was born the Alcopop, those prepackaged drinks that are targeted to teenagers. And they're very successful in steering women towards vodka and primarily the clear spirits, and very, very successful. Smirnoff, for instance, saw a rise in its sales between 2000 and 2008 by 61% with the birth of Smirnoff Ice. This was a very, very big hit. So on campuses, you'll find people playing drinking games with young men, drinking beer, and the young woman who's two-thirds his size is drinking shots of tequila, shots of vodka, and often not eating and drinking on an empty stomach. And we've seen a huge rise in drunkorexia, which is a mixture of eating disorders and and risky drinking among young women, especially of college age. So it really is at an epidemic level and a very frightening level, and epidemiologists don't know where it's going to stop. It is confounding.
I want to take a caller now. We have Isaiah on the line from Lac des Flambeaux. Hi, Isaiah.
Hello. I work in Lac des Flambeaux as an epidemiologist. I don't specialize in alcohol, but I know that the behavior risk factor surveillance survey recently changed how they define what's binge drinking, and they separate men from women, and I believe they made the drinks less. So
right.
What used to be binge drinking at, like, you required 4 drinks for a woman, now I think it's only 2 or 3. Do you think that's why you would explain some of the rise, or do you think it's beyond that?
No, it's funny. I am at a conference, and I just left a room where a statistician was dealing with this issue. The classic behavior was to call it 5 drinks, whether you're male or female. It's 5 drinks for men, 4 drinks for women. And Canadian data, for instance, had already been alarming when the accommodation for the 4 drinks, so in other words, when it was gender specific and gender appropriate, the numbers actually rose for women another 50%. So the story is dire, and it gets more dire as you use the proper data.
Well, we're talking right now with Ann Dowsett Johnston. She's a recovered alcoholic herself and the author of Drink, The Intimate Relationship Between Women and Alcohol. She's also a former vice president of McGill University.
And we want to hear from you. Do you worry about high-risk drinking among American women? Is it getting out of hand for college students, high school teens, or other age groups? Do you think women drink for different reasons than men drink? You can call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or send an email, talk@WPR.org. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret.
We're picking up our conversation now with Ann Dowsett Johnston. She's a former vice president of McGill University, an award-winning magazine writer, and the author of Drink, The Intimate Relationship Between Women and Alcohol.
And we want to hear from you. What do you think is driving the upswing in dangerous drinking and binge drinking for women? You can call us at 800-642-1234. Do you see this in the world around you on a college campus, at a workplace, in your neighborhood? 800-642-1234 is the number to call, or send an email, talk@WPR.org.
And Ann, one of the things that has been in the media quite a bit lately has been some controversy about suggesting that alcohol is a risk factor in rapes. And sometimes where it gets sticky is sort of the inference that, you know, women are responsible for getting raped, maybe partially because they've been drinking. What do you think about how alcohol kind of factors into rape?
Well, I think that, I mean, I know full well what you're referring to is the blame the victim issue, but I think we've known for a long time that alcohol is the number one date rape drug. We've seen some extraordinarily tragic stories emerge over the past year or two out of Canada and the United States, where young women have taken their lives after cyberbullying has happened. But there's been a great focus on cyberbullying and not enough, I think, on the presence of alcohol in those stories. So I think, you know, the sad truth is I've spent a lot of time on campuses recently, and the sad truth is there is such a thing as competitive blacking out.
Competitive blacking out?
Yes, bragging about who can black out fastest. Hmm. And when you get into a culture of what someone cynically called efficient drinking, so this generation doesn't drink and drive, but they pre-drink, pre-load, pre-game before they go out to the bar for the evening. When you see that kind of situation, we're talking about extremely risky behavior, sexually risky, risk of assault. So it's a difficult conversation to have, but it's one we need to be having.
And what would you say to young women who are at college campuses who might be in that culture, whether or not they want to be?
I would say I would say be aware that you are being heavily targeted by the alcohol industry. Be aware, because I don't think that this generation likes being targeted, doesn't like being duped. Know that you're being heavily targeted. Know that that you are responsible for your own safety. And know that you have to be aware and be alert. This is a highly problematic substance that can lead to a lot of danger.
And as far as the question of rape, should women be especially, you know, on alert? Is this something that women need to take more seriously?
I think women have to take alcohol far more seriously. I think the entire culture needs to. I'm not trying to be a killjoy, and I'm not a prohibitionist by any stretch of the imagination. But I do think that it's true that we had a turning point when it was tobacco we were talking about. And we are aware of the downsides of trans fats and tanning beds. We are not aware of the downsides of alcohol, and we live in a highly alcogenic culture. And that is how the alcohol industry would like it to be. Have us consume without thinking twice. And I think it is something we have to have a very, very open conversation about. I think we need to know that a glass of red wine isn't the same as dark chocolate. We need to understand that there is a huge risk to over-drinking. And I don't believe that, I believe we're uncomfortable with the conversation.
I want to take a caller now. Let's go to Nikki in Beloit. Hi, Nikki.
Hi there.
Hi, what do you think?
I think that the expectation for women is set forth when you're younger that you are to be treated equally and, you know, be able to get the same pay. And if you work just as hard as a man, you know, you're equal. But women are not equal sexually and in relationships. And the judgment is completely different for women. And as they take on more responsibilities, as single mothers, as wives, as employees, there's more stress and there's more disappointment.
Okay, thank you, Nikki. What do you think about that, Anne?
I think that comment is right on the money. I think that, you know, there's an enormous sense of entitlement of he can do it, I can do it. There's even studies that say that young women believe that young men want them to go drink for drink and that young men do not. So I think there is a sense of, I'm repeating myself, but a huge lack of understanding of what the substance is and what the consequences are. I think we are so comfortable with the substance, and we have sent such a profound message that if you're sophisticated, you know your wines. If you're mature, you're supposed to be able to hold your liquor. And we have totally overlooked the fact that for instance, for a woman, a low-risk drinking guideline says that you should be drinking no more than 9 or 10 drinks a week. If you're drinking 2 drinks a day, you're over that. We just it's as if someone gave us a car and forgot to give us a speed limit.
I want to follow up on something you said about, you know, we need to recognize that a glass of red wine is not the same as a bar of dark chocolate. And it is, you know, it is kind of a cliche among women, you know, to say, oh, we'll go out and have a bottle of wine and we'll, you know, talk about whatever we're talking about, or that's a wine conversation, or there's a whole Sex and the City sort of mystique around alcohol, kind of a glamour, if you want to call it that. Is there space in society as it exists now for women who you don't want to drink that much or maybe don't want to drink at all?
I think it's hard. I think it's very hard as a person who gave up alcohol. I did a lot of my heavier drinking in private, and I had many, many friends say, come on, you never drank that much. You go ahead and have one. It's very difficult to be the girl without or the woman without the drink. And very, you know, it is a cliche, and yet it's a cliche for a reason. You know, that's whether it's Carrie Bradshaw with her Cosmo or a book club where everyone gets together a girls' weekend away. Alcohol is a major part of the mix, and we've come to accept that. Try and buy a birthday card for a woman right now without an alcohol reference. You know, so common. It used to be just weight, and now it is always about alcohol, another mint, you know, mojito, one mojito, two mojito, three mojito, four is a common one. It's it is alcogenic, the society we live in, and it's almost as if we don't notice it. We're swimming in the marketing, and we do not notice it.
What do you do yourself? You know, you've been through this. You've been in the high-pressure social situations because those are the circles that you swim in. As a recovered alcoholic 5 years, how do you get by socially? And knowing what you do about the dangers of alcohol and having experienced them firsthand, what do you do to sort of be an ambassador for a different way of interacting with alcohol for women?
I always have a drink in my hand, in the sense that you learn that to get that Diet Coke or that mocktail or that water in your hand. And I've learned that I can have a great time, an absolutely great time with my friends. Not at first. Learning how to live without alcohol in our culture is not easy. But once I got the hang of it, I'm the most Anne I've ever been. I'm the most happy and adjusted. And alcohol, I sleep better. It's brought me enormous peace, but I let it go too far. I guess my great word of advice is if you're enjoying it and drinking for the right reasons, which is not to numb but just to enjoy yourself, count your drinks, because it isn't a privilege you want to lose in our culture. It's very hard once you do. And my other bit of advice would be if you have a person you're concerned about, be it a friend or a partner or a son or a daughter, speak up. I grew up in a family where it was the elephant in the living room, and we weren't allowed to raise it. And believe me, your loved one won't be happy when you raise it, but they will hear you, and something may tip that person into recovery.
Well, Anne, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
It was a real pleasure. Thank you for having me.
We were talking to Anne Dowsett-Johnston. Her new book is called Drink, The Intimate Relationship Between Women and Alcohol.